I'd like to begin with an acknowledgement to country. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay respect to them and their elders, past, present, and emerging. We give thanks for their wisdom and for their care of country since ancient times. I acknowledge their resilience, their continuing culture, and the ongoing contribution they make to the life of this region. The title of this reflection is Deep Listening, or Zen and the Art of Listening. And I'd like to begin with two little epigraphs that come from a book that has been very important to me in the last month or so. Just on Listening by William Miller, just called Listening Well, I think. And every chapter has got a little epigraph on it, and they're usually quite humorous as well as meaningful. Will Rogers is quoted as saying, "Never miss a good chance to shut up." And someone named Susan Cain has written, "We have two ears and one mouth, and we should use them proportionately." I think the lack of listening is one of the great, great problems of our times, and in some ways almost the greatest. Our inability or incapacity or unwillingness to listen to each other, and we see the results of it in so many different ways around the world. Now, Zen has a fair amount to say about speaking. There's some very important mentions of speaking. It's one of the right speech, of course, is one of the Eightfold Paths. And also the precepts. They vary in number, but I think they all include something about not lying, which is a traditional way of putting it, or false speech, or in the Ordinary Mind school, Diane Rossetto, speaking truthfully. So a lot of attention is paid to the way we speak, the words we choose. We know how much damage words can do. I have found much less. I can't claim to have done exhaustive research, but I don't find very much on listening. The major exception is Thich Nhat Hanh, not a traditional text, and we'll come back to him in a while. Now, in general, conversation involves really just two things, speaking and listening. You think we ought to be able to do that pretty easily. And it's actually a kind of collaboration between two or more parties. And I've seen a diagram that speaks clearly to me, which has four different boxes, and they're arranged in a kind of circular formation, starting out with the speaker's intention, the speaker's meaning. You know, I want to tell you about whatever it is. The speaker then puts into words what his meaning, intended meaning, is. And then it's sort of over to the listener, over to the hearer. The hearer or the listener hears words. And out of that words, the hearer constructs a meaning that he assumes the speaker is intending. If we just stop there, we'd probably be in trouble because there's often a gap between the original meaning and the heard meaning of the listener. So an important aspect of this, and I'm sure everybody here is aware of that in terms of basic communication, is to check or to reflect. the hearer then has a responsibility, if it's a collaborative effort, to check out what meaning she has heard from the speaker. So this is really just conversation 101, I guess, is just the base. And it can go on and on and on and on. So there are various ways of just of checking, the simplest being sort of minimal encouragers, a reflection, a kind of mirroring back, can be very useful to just check, or just saying, you know, am I hearing you correctly? So some sort of reflection or empathic reaction. And the cycle can continue on, hopefully, until there's a congruence between the what was in the mind of the speaker and what the hearer has understood from that. This may be difficult enough in ordinary conversation. In conflict situations, of course, it's even harder. And what William Miller, the psychologist, suggests is trying to find out what matters most to the listener's side. What matters most to the speaker? What is it? Particularly, what are the values behind what the speaker is talking about? So listening with curiosity. And I think here we go back to the Heart Sutra too. Listening with an empty hearing capacity. It's emptiness that we usually come to a conversation, especially a conflict-based one, with our hearing faculty already chock-a-block with what we know is to be right in the situation. So listening with curiosity, refraining from roadblocks that deflect the flow of the experience that the speaker is talking about. Roadblocks are things like giving advice, of course, making judgments, contradicting. Miller suggests even agreeing can stop it, the narrative. Then the speaker assumes that, oh yeah, you understand. You've just said, yeah, that sounds it. Instead of keeping checking that. So reflecting like a mirror, checking out the message as it's received. And we're not very good at this as a culture. Many indigenous cultures, I think, are much better at it. And I am aware of not being from an indigenous culture and learning things from the outside. But I understand there's a really interesting expression in a Central Australian language, which is, can they bend their knees? Implying that it requires the listener to sit down with the speaker. Let's just get down on the earth and I'll give you my attention. I'm a little bit more aware just because of my background with Native American traditions, one of which has been borrowed by our dominant culture, by people involved in meeting facilitation and, for instance, the talking stick of past. And I think that exists in other traditional cultures as well. And a Native American website says the following about that. Listening without reacting or intending to respond. Listening without being influenced by long-held images, memories, or firmly held positions. Listening instead with a beginner's mind. And the website goes on to say, each member comes to know that they bring a piece of the truth to the circle, essential in itself, but only part of the whole. And then the passion of our personal vision is shared without attachment. And then our position is released to the larger truth of the circle. It's very interesting language, very reminiscent of Zen, the beginner's mind and listening without attachment, an empty mind in our listening. Now, in the two of the readings that we had today, there are glimpses of listening, perhaps not explicitly stated. Well, the Heart Sutra is one of them, as just one of our faculties, one of our senses to listen with hearing with the hearing faculty being empty. Torai Zenji's vow says, we can be especially understanding and affectionate with foolish people, particularly with someone who becomes a sworn enemy and persecutes us with abusive language. With our open response to such abuse, we completely relinquish ourselves. Open response, not a but. And of course, but is the key word to cut off conversations. I understand that, but. So with an open response, that's a non-but response, I guess, relinquishing ourselves, Torai Zenji talks about relinquishing our ego part for the purpose of listening. Now I think that this doesn't mean that one caves into anything that is said by the other party or other parties. It's just a question. The first thing to do is to approach with curiosity. What is it? As Miller says, what are the values behind what they're saying? And Rumi, of course, has given us a picture of the uninvited guests besieging your doorway, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Now, I don't know how explicitly we want to take that, but it seems to me that what we don't want to hear is something that draws our own ego-based attention, brings it out. We act, a reactive response to that sort of thing. So it may be useful in a couple of things I think of in terms of our Zen experiences to be able to acknowledge the Buddha in the other party and the Buddha in oneself, and to try to bring to listen like a Buddha and to understand that we have the capacity to do that and to bring beginner's mind, that curiosity, that don't know mind to the conversation. The tougher the conversation, the more important not knowing is. Now, as I was suggesting before, that's not the end of the line. One has a duty, and one has a duty to the Buddha within oneself, of course, to then take it further and to make decisions about how one wants to act. But the first responsibility is to listen. And Thich Nhat Hanh has some, words from personal experience. Someone who listened too well to both sides in the Vietnam conflict and survived, essentially bomb attacks, and other monks in his order did get killed for it. And eventually, of course, he emigrated to France and founded Plum Village there. But just by way of conclusion, it's Thich Nhat Hanh's fourth precept. And he calls it deep listening. Deep listening is the kind of listening that can help relieve the suffering of another person. You can call it compassionate listening. You listen with only one purpose, to help him or her to empty his heart. Even if he says things that are full of wrong perceptions, full of bitterness, you are still capable of continuing to listen with compassion. Because you know that listening like that, you give that person a chance to suffer less.